I said last week that I'd start this sermon by repeating myself. And so for those that weren't here, it's to your benefit. For those that were here, it's not really a test to remember that last week's sermon was on memory, I promise. But it's to reiterate an important idea. It has never been easy to be a person of faith. Not 18 years ago, not in the 1950s, not in biblical Palestine. But we choose this life because God chose us. God calls us, and every day we put our faith on the line. As Eugene Peterson says in his book, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, every day I put faith on the line. I've never seen God. In a world where nearly everything can be weighed, explained, quantified, subjected to psychological analysis and scientific control, I persist in making the center of my life a God in whom no eye has seen, nor ear has heard, whose will no one can probe. That's a risk. Every day I put hope on the line. I don't know one thing about the future. I don't know what the next hour will hold. There may be sickness, accident, personal or world catastrophe. Before this day is over, I may have to deal with death, pain, loss, rejection. I don't know what the future holds for me, for those I love, for my nation, for this world. Still, despite my ignorance and surrounded by tinny optimists and cowardly pessimists, I say that God will accomplish his will, and I cheerfully persist in living the hope that nothing will separate me from Christ's love. Every day I put hope, I put love on the line. There is nothing I am less good at than love. I am far better in competition than in love. I am far better at responding to my instincts and ambitions to get ahead and make my mark than I am at figuring out how to love one another. I am schooled and trained in acquisitive skills in getting my own way, and yet I decide every day to set aside what I can do best and attempt what I do very clumsily, open myself to the frustrations and failures of loving, daring to believe that failing in love is better than succeeding in pride. No wonder when people say that they don't want to come to church, no wonder that we just let them go. Putting our faith, our hope, our love on the line is exhausting. It's not an easy road. You've had it said to you, either your kids or your grandkids or your neighbors or your friends, someone in your life has said they don't want or they don't need to come to church because they already experience God in ways that transcend that hourly service once a week. But what they're really saying and giving you the many reasons why they don't show up is that faith, church, it's exhausting. The minute you come to church and put your faith on the line, you could be faced with one person's ideas that you disagree with. Pewmates who don't vote as you do, live as you do, believe as you do. There may be pews filled with people who annoy you. Pause for laughter. People who hate the hymns you like. Others who still put you to the test of those words of judge not, lest ye be judged. Basically, what those in the pews know, and those who refuse to come to church know, is that as much as we aspire for more, the church is filled with human beings. As the quote goes, since the church is more often the hospital for sinners as it is the hotel for saints, it's very common to find wounded people wounding people. It's so common that we rarely know that we're doing it. But we've gathered here because we need healing. We need rest. We need to recharge. It's exhausting being a person of faith. And we need the reminder of church to remind us we're not alone because this world is so easily divided. Spend some time on Facebook or on one of the comment sites for a news article. Pick something controversial like safe injection sites here in the Tri-City. I could have you all stand and pick a side. And you'll find protests and counter-protests. You'll see all manner of people unconcerned with the impact of their words upon someone else. Their empathy and their sympathy, if they have it, is tucked away like fine china, only reserved for those special to you. It's no wonder that conspiracy theorists have been redeemed when they've now proven that Russia is using social media to divide us. In both the U.S. in terms of the election and Trump's presidency, in Canada in terms of Trudeau and Canadian soldiers, the Cold War didn't go away, it went online. Sides are being galvanized. You're either with us or against us. You either show up to church or you don't believe in God at all. And we've confused with having an opinion or holding faith or believing something, all of which can be changed. We've confused that with identity. But that's a whole nother sermon. What we need to learn is how easily divided we are. In our need to belong, we don't have to choose one side over another. The author of this letter to the church in Ephesus is writing to Gentiles, that is, non-Jewish people, knowing they know very little about the other side. It's an attempt at inclusion and education. The letter talks about the rich history of God's covenants and promises in Israel, and while it drifts a little bit into supersessionism, that is, Christianity replacing Israel, I honestly think it's the intent of the letter to make it clear to everyone that we're all in this together. There's no outsiders to faith. We see it in the quotes that Doreen shared. You were once out of it altogether and now are in on everything. We're now together on this, both non-Jewish outsiders and Jewish insiders. Instead of continuing with two groups of people separated by centuries of animosity and suspicion, God created a new kind of human being, a fresh start for everybody. Jesus treated us as equals and so made us equals. What a powerful message of unity that we need in this time. Literally, Doreen was in my office prior to the service saying, I read the scripture, I read it over, it's so relevant. I said, stop talking, that's my sermon. In a world so easily and painfully divided, in this us-them polarizing culture, we need to hear, we're together on this. We need this fresh start, this equality-based treatment of one another. And I yearn for the days when we had this. And I was trying to think back of when it was really true in our culture. Around the world wars, around the Depression, there was something greater that united people. Right? It was this cause and this struggle for life that reminded people, if you had plenty, you share with those who don't. And we've been blessed by this world of comfort that we forgot that we're in this together. And this time in the church, when this author was writing this letter, we said last week it wasn't probably Paul, it was written after his death, but the author was begging these Gentiles to see that there was something greater that pulled them together. They didn't have to believe the same way, look the same way, act the same way. In fact, if you actually go, we read from the message, if you go to NRSV, it gets really, really specific and talks about the circumcised and uncircumcised. We went with the message. It doesn't say the Gentiles have to be the Jews. It doesn't say the Jews have to be the Gentiles. But that there's something greater that has pulled them together. It's that they are united. Not uniform, but united. Pierre Elliott Trudeau, and I've used this quote before, but he said, a society which emphasizes uniformity, he's talking about Canada, a society which emphasizes uniformity is one which creates intolerance and hate. What the world should be seeking and what in Canada we must continue to cherish are not concepts of uniformity, but human values, compassion and love and understanding. This is a world of unity, united by values, rooted in compassion and love and understanding. And it's why I think the author abandons all those things that separated the Jews and the Gentiles to utter three powerful words. You belong here. Imagine hearing that for the first time. You've spent years on the outside, a forgotten member of society because you weren't part of the chosen people. Years you were maligned or spat upon or denounced, and to hear that you belonged, that you were welcome into this family of faith, that you were loved and cherished and important, not because you fit in, but because you were different, irrespective of how you got there. You belonged. If only that was front and center on the first thing that people saw when you came in. If only that was how we treated one another when you got to church. To say that you belong, even if you don't like the hymns, even if you don't believe the same as I do, if you're on one side of the issue or the other, to say that you still belong is powerful. You don't have to dress the same way, believe the same way, live your life the same way as everyone else, and yet you belong. Imagine still that you're on the other side of this issue, part of Israel. The part who saw in Jesus a fulfillment of prophecy. There's a whole other part that didn't. But for those that the author is writing to, those have spent years guarding this story, putting faith and hope and love on the line as they awaited a Messiah. To be gracious to these newcomers, to the faith, this is going to take all of your courage. To welcome Gentiles who don't act like you do, believe as you do, live as you do. These were two separate groups who needed to hear and to live into a unity that declared and lived out Christ's welcome. You belong here. Or, you belong here. Or better yet, you. In all of your failings, in all of your struggles, in all of your woundedness, in all of your brokenness, you belong here. This week, as the United Church of Canada prepares right now to open its 43rd General Council, as they'll contemplate our future and our hope together, we need more than ever to live into these words of belonging. And you know what? This week, I truly felt it. A letter started circulating, put together by the United Church clergy, Ontario United Church clergy. And at last count, nearly 300 of us had signed it. It was a sign of unity, a letter of unity sent to Premier Doug Ford to remind him that we're all in this together. You can find it on the web. I got the link in my sermon. And I was moved, and the reason I signed it is it because it didn't create an us-them mindset. You know, we're going up against the premier. There was none of that. It reminded all of us that we have common interests. It spoke particularly about the vulnerable and the marginalized, those struggling for affordable housing. And it said, not literal terms, but in a powerful way, that you belong here. To the refugees fleeing their countries, it reminded them that they belong here. To you and I, conservative and liberal and NDP and undecided, to Christians and Jews and Muslims and atheists, it reminds all of us that we belong. For us who have chosen to be here, we hear the ending of this chapter in a powerful way. We belong because God is building a home. God is using us all, irrespective of how we got here, in what God is building. God used the apostles and prophets for the foundation. Now God is using you, fitting you in brick by brick, stone by stone, with Christ Jesus as the cornerstone that holds all the parts together. We see it taking shape day after day, a holy temple built by God, all of us built into it, a temple in which God is quite at home. May we truly be united this and all our days, for we are not alone. I invite you into a time of reflection, a time of stillness, a time of peace. Yesterday, during the sermon, we had our windows open, and in a moment of silence, we heard the birds singing, and it was awesome to hear Hannah cooing during our silence, to remind us that there are generations that need us, need our faith and our hope.